Blog Talk Radio.
Doesn't do the lead, so you know the scene
feelings there for the taking. But in, and I think in both of these films, I mean, Denzel Washington really did a good job as Ezekiel Rawlings, and to me, he was Ezekiel Rawlings. I mean, it's like I wouldn't put Don Cheadle in that role. But Don Cheadle just so, I mean, he doesn't even get into the film until like half an hour into the film is when he shows up, or maybe even more than that. And it's just like, wow, who was that? Who was that tornado? Who was that Tasmanian devil? It's like, wow, amazing. And just the way he comes in, he just takes the scene. He just takes this role because he really just, it was like somebody had like four kings and he came in with the aces. So Denzel Washington had the kings, but, you know, Don Cheadle had the aces. He just did. And I don't, you know, I'm not sure what it is. I was reading that David Alan Grier actually tried out for that role and didn't get it, obviously. And I'm like, what are we doing? David Alan Grier would have brought for that role, but Don Cheadle was just, he was just a force of nature as Mouse. He just was.
There is that his name was Mouse, and this dude was a tornado, like you said. It's quite the craziness in the name, because by no means he's more like a lion roar than a mouse.
I think that's the whole point. I think that's the cool part about it is Mouse comes across as played by Cheadle. Mouse comes across as being a force of nature. He's not necessarily bound by the same rules that everybody else has. He serves a definite purpose to keep the story going forward. I don't want to say that he was a mere mechanic for the story. He's more than that. I think he is a force of nature in that world. And if you're in the way of that force of nature, consequences are going to be paid. And if you're not, you know, that's fine with him. And he does a great job carrying that and adds a lot of energy to this film that wouldn't be there without his performance.
Right. And, you know, here's another irony. That also in that movie was Tom Sizemore, who played the sort of this sinister, like, enforcer-type character who first hires Ezekiel Rawlings to look for the woman in the blue dress, which, hence the name of the movie and the novel, the Walter Mosley novel upon which the movie is based. Tom Sizemore had a rep and was often hired to play like these heavy, you know, sort of violent guys that, you know, you just don't know when they're going to erupt any second, and they're, you know, they could just pop off at any minute and blah, blah, blah. And so you've got Don Cheadle, who really, you know, personifies all of that, versus Tom Sizemore, who really personifies all of that in that role and also in his own life, his own personal life. And somehow Tom Sizemore can't take the film from Don Cheadle, because when you look at Devil in a Blue Dress, it's like, well, you know, who kind of stole that film from Denzel Washington? People aren't saying Tom Sizemore did, although Tom Sizemore did a very good job. They're saying it's Don Cheadle, and I think appropriately so.
Sure. Now, you know, I got to tell you, the guy who plays Todd Carter, Terry Kinney. He's a Chicago, and he's from the Steppenwolf company. He's one of the founding members of Steppenwolf. And I always enjoy him when he's in anything. And I thought that he, again, played his role perfectly for the film. And I think the reason why I'm mentioning this, only because I like to give him kudos whenever I can, but so many people in this film are do a great job in giving energy to the story and giving us viewers something to really look at. And Denzel tends to go from scene to scene, being carried away in this almost this chaotic journey. you know, of being thrown about. And like that quote at the very beginning that, you know, about a man who once told you he stood out your front door in the morning and you're already in trouble. You remember that quote?
Right.
You know, the only question is, are you on top of that trouble or not?
Right.
And
right.
And he's not. And he just bounces around from place to place to place. And each of these people, each of these scenes, each of these relationships plays an important role in his journey. And I think that when it gets to Cheadle's character, when it gets to Mouse, you know, you see this at its best throughout the entire film.
Mm-hmm. I love this at one point in the movie when Denzel Washington is talking to another friend of his on his front porch. And he says, you know, hey, if you have a friend who does a lot of really bad things, and you know that they've done all these bad things, should you still be friends with them? Basically paraphrasing, but that's basically what he said. And his friend said back to him, well, you gotta have your friends. And Denzel's like, yeah, I guess so. And it's like, you know, yeah, I mean, Mouse is like, he brought Mouse in. He knew what he was doing when he called Mouse. It's not like he didn't know what Mouse was like, although he seems to be continually surprised at Mouse's ability to be Mouse. You just have to laugh at that part where they're you know, trying to ambush these guys who have kidnapped the woman in the blue dress. And there's one guy who actually knew what was going on, even though he was Ezekiel's friend. He really kind of set him up, and he's in the car with Mouse, and Ezekiel says, well, you know, I'm going to leave you with him, and I'm going to go up to the house and stake things out, and you just, you know, don't kill him, just, you know, watch him, and I'll be right back. And he comes back, and he's like, what happened to the guy you were watching? And he's dead on the ground. And Zizel's like, what the F? What happened? And Mouse is like, well, I didn't shoot him. I just, you know, I choked him. I didn't shoot him. You know, he's like, but if you didn't want me to kill him, you really shouldn't have left me with him. You know, and Denzel's like, you're right. I should not have done that. It's my fault entirely that this happened. And it was just hilarious to me, but it's so true.
When Mouse comes up for the first time, he comes in the house, and he basically saves Ezekiel's life, more or less. And at the latter part of the conversation, he goes, Mouse, I mean, man, I don't know if I should brought you up here or not. He's like, I mean, what you're doing and stuff. He's like, well, I mean, you knew when you asked me to come up here. He says, but I didn't want you to shoot anybody or kill anybody. He said, so I should have known when you had killed those people back in South Carolina. I should have known. But you knew.
Right.
You knew. So you had him come up there because he was the right person for the job.
You know, one of the things that I really like about this film in general is that allegorical to the story Little Red Riding Hood. You have instead of Little Red Riding Hood, you have the Devil in a Blue Dress, and you have your wolves, you have your woodsmen, it's very interesting. Now, it's not the same story at all, but it has certain connections to it, and I rather like that those connections between the two stories.
Well, I thought it was a very well done film, and I think, you know, some of the other things about the film. This film got a lot of nominations, and I think it actually got an award for cinematography, and the cinematography was just gorgeous in this film, and really the coloring of the film, the sort of muted colors and sort of the sepia tones and that pervade the film, the soundtrack of the film, the production, the set design, really did a lot to help sort of evoke this story, and so it really helped, and it's sort of, you know, you've got you've got, like, Easy Rawlings just sort of, you know, he's trying to make it, you know, as an aircraft mechanic or something. He's trying to get some sort of job because jobs are plentiful after World War II unless you're an African-American
right.
who just
right.
got back from World War II, at which point
yeah.
they're not so plentiful.
Yeah.
So, you know, he's just trying to make it, and he gets fired from his job, and
yeah.
he's, you know, and he's trying to pay the mortgage because he's not going to lose his house no matter what. So when Tom Sizemore comes along and says, well, hey, I've got a job for you, and here's $100, which is like 2 months of mortgage payments, of course, you know, Easy Rawlings
is
going to
yeah.
say no to that. How
I
could
wanna,
he? He's got to pay the mortgage.
I want to mention real quick I want to mention very quickly the director of photography, Tak Fujimoto, who does an excellent job. You mentioned the cinematography, and it was Fujimoto has been the cinematographer in some fantastic films, including things like Ferris Bueller's Day Off and Pretty in Pink, but also Philadelphia and The Silence of the Lambs. And he brought a lot of his own expertise into this film and is as much a part of the success of this film as Don Cheadle is.
Right.
Well, we've only got about 13 minutes left, you guys, so why don't we hit the movie that Karen really loved, which was Now, the three of us, we should have liked this movie. This movie is talking about our homeland, which is Chicago, and we've got an Irish mob. That means that we should really have gotten into this film, this Irish mob, Chicago, our affinity with Chicago, and yet it didn't quite happen like that. But we've got an Irish gangster who takes in Tom Hanks' character as a child and brings him into the business, and Tom Hanks has two sons, and the two kids are curious about what dad does for a living. So here we have a movie where the son witnesses the Irish mobster and his kin doing something they shouldn't be doing. And so now there's a hit basically on Tom Hanks and his kids and his family. Enter Jude Law, the hitman, Harlan McGuire. So what do you guys think about Jude Law's portion of this particular film?
Well, I'll run with this one at first. First of all, I want to say that this is a hard movie to make. It was based on a graphic novel by the same name, and the Jude Law character was not in the graphic novel, and that's one of the reasons I believe that the character stands out as much as it does, because the character is directly driven by the narrative in the comic book. And so we almost have a voice for the narrator in his character. And Jude Law does a great job bringing that up to the surface to help tell the story. It's interesting, you know, here he is, he's a photographer. So he's watching everything, he's seeing everything, and he's an assassin. So what does he do? Well, he sees something, and gosh darn it, what does he do? He gets rid of those things that his bosses want him to get rid of. But at the same time, he keeps that element of distance between him and his targets, his suspects, even if they appear to be intimate. They're not. He does a great job at doing that and a great job at showing that inner struggle with that, even though he's not the primary character.
Now, when I was looking at Jude Law, he kind of gave me in my mind, I know he's an assassin, but to me, assassins, to some degree, are somewhat serial killers in a way.
Mm-hmm.
And I likened his character with a television character in the TV series Dexter. Dexter would take remnants of the people that he killed, and he did it because he thought it was the right thing to do for the situations at the time. And he would keep those things in, the microscope in samples that he had. And here we have Jude Law taking pictures of some of the people that he killed and keeping those pictures and blotting out the bad and bringing in the good. It reminded me a lot of Dexter. But that was just a correlation I wanted to make. Go ahead, Karen. You had something else you wanted to say about the film?
Yeah, I agree with the things that you and Larry are bringing up about this particular movie. Jude Law does a really fine job in this movie, and in a lot of ways he does steal scenes from Tom Hanks. They're not really even all that many scenes together, but he does steal scenes, and I think for some of the reasons that Larry pointed out. The other thing that I guess that I want to mention is that, you know, Jude Law is British, and I think in this movie he exemplifies that fine British tradition, acting tradition of physicality, because when I was in acting class, the wisdom was that Americans tend to internalize, they act from the inside out, and the Brits tend to act from the outside in. And if you look at Jude Law's character, he has these very physical attributes that he brought to the character that really personified that character. Some of them were because of the direction, like, for example, the director of the movie insisted that Jude Law be paler than everybody else. And if you look at IMDb, when Jude Law was interviewed about this movie, he said he hated the way that he looked in this movie. He has one of the reasons that he looks so freaking pale. But the other thing that the way he holds himself, it's like he skulks around, almost like a rat. You know, and he sort of reminded me just physically of a rat. He was just like there scurrying, and you never really heard him coming. He would just show up, and just extremely sinister from that standpoint. And even though he doesn't have like the extremely keen features that you would think somebody who was sort of rat-like would have, you sort of put them there because of the way in which he physically brings those attributes to the role. And I think that was really interesting to watch, and that I think that's one of the reasons why you couldn't really stop watching him in this movie. He's like the stuff of nightmares, you know?
Well, it is, and you know, what's interesting is this, they call this a neo-noir film, but it's more like what Japanese film noir has become more than the American film noir scene. And that's very apparent from, if you take a look at, again, its source, this graphic novel, and what they did with it on screen. It's very much like Japanese film noir, especially the crime film noir. It has the same look, the same feel, the same textures. It has the same rhythm. It's very much worthwhile. For our listeners, if you ever want an interesting experience, pick up some of the Japanese film noir, and you'll see exactly what I'm talking about here.
Yeah, it's a grim film, though. It's grim. And Daniel, you know, another, I guess, tip of the hat that I would want to bring up here is to Daniel Craig, who's in this movie, playing the misbegotten son of the Irish mobster. And, you know, the Irish mobster in Road to Perdition, what was the name of that mobster? It was...
They're the Connors.
First name was Connor, and then his last name was... The son's first name was Connor, and the... And I really want to recall the last name of the family.
The last name is Rooney.
Right. Thank you, Greg. There actually was an Irish mob family called Looney, for real, in Chicago. And so the Roonies in The Road to Perdition were a tip of the hat to that actual Irish mob family that existed in Chicago.
Before we have to go, just going really quick, it's also interesting to compare the two different movies and the two characters, you know, and what kind of characters they were, what they did, and how these actors, what they did similarly and differently to get the characters to come forward onto the screen.
Indeed. I found that in that correlation, Mouse had his own way of being very easy about things. He was very lighthearted, to be honest, yet sinister at the same time. And going to what you were saying, Karen, about the paleness and the essence of Jude Law in the film, it made him more sinister than he would have been otherwise. And in many of the films that he had been in prior, he was a likable character for the most part in many of the films.
Right.
Even going back to the movie with Matt Damon, Fabulous Mr. Ripley, something comparable to that?
Oh, The Talented Mr. Ripley.
Mr. Ripley.
Yeah.
And Jude Law's character was so nice and so likable, why would you, in that film, kill him?
Also kind of a rogue, though. I mean, he cheated on poor Gwyneth Paltrow, you know, with complete impunity. So I didn't mind that he got it. Well, that's just me.
Yeah, but my point is, nothing like the character that he's playing here is my point.
No, it's nothing at all.
I was sort of kidding.
Good.
Well, we've got about 3 minutes left. Any comments before we go into our next phase of our show, which is our after show on Hangouts on Air? Anything else you guys wanted to say to our listening audience here on Blog Talk Radio?
Well, I would like to say for any of our listeners who are dying for rain, watch Road to Perdition. You will get more than you ever bargained for, because it never stops raining in that film, ever, except for like 2 seconds.
Another thing I wanted to mention is both these pieces are kind of period pieces. This is not modern-day film for either film. Post-World War II, pre-World War II, I mean, we're talking around that time frame. Post-World War II for Lady Devil in the Blue Dress and pre-World War II in Road to Perdition. I thought aesthetically good for both films, and I do, of course, felt like I was to Sleepless in Seattle. That's a Tom Hanks movie also, where there was a lot of rain, but it much more rain in this movie. How about you, Larry? Anything to say before we head out of here and go to our next phase of our show?
I enjoyed both films for very different reasons, and the two performances are outstanding, and I recommend people next time they'll see these films to pay attention to these two fine actors.
Well, thanks, everybody, for listening here on A Real Point of View on Blog Talk Radio. Definitely check out our archives here. We've gone through a lot of different shows, different movies, and also check us out. You can check me out and leave questions and comments on Twitter at my Twitter account, at A Real Movie Guy, and also to check out The Movie Maven also on Twitter. And leave comments and things on our Facebook account, which is under A Real Point of View. Thanks again for listening, you guys, and make sure you go out and see a movie and entertain yourselves. Have a good night, and for those of you who want to continue the conversation, come join us on Google Plus at our Hangout on Air, which will start momentarily. Thanks again, everybody, and have a good night.